Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Happy New Year! I hope everybody had a great ending of the new year and a great celebration of this 2018 year coming in. I've decided, as I was just talking coming in today, that I think from now on, I am, instead of celebrating the New Year's Eve and the New Year's Day, I think I'm going to start celebrating the penultimate day of the year. And so I will leave that to you and maybe, you know, be hosting parties or what have you for the penultimate day of the year, and try to put that thing on the calendar or the social map of the not just the area, but, you know, the West Coast. Who knows? It may take off as an opportunity to celebrate something that means something kind of unique if you don't know what penultimate means. Anywho, if you cannot listen to this entire show today, it will be rebroadcasted on Saturday at 1 p.m., and it will also be rebroadcasted on Sunday at 9 p.m. And so, not sure if you enjoyed my segment and conversation with John Hancock. I think you did. I really did, at least last week, and how we ended up the year. And in talking about that, the podcast is actually up and out on my ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website. However, I've reorganized it, and obviously this year's podcasts have all been wiped out and moved over. So if you go over to the podcast archive page, I now have my 2016 archives and the January 2017 for my KTW, when I was on KTW for about 4 months. And then so all of the KSBN 2017 podcasts have been moved over to the 2017 archive. So please go check them out, and I beseech you to start listening to some of those, because this is an educational program, and these shows they dovetail and they intertwine, and we've tried to create this fabric to help you catch yourself in understanding what little our republicanism is, what the Constitution really has empowered the federal government, and how we can actually restore our hybrid constitutional republic through reclaiming the republic, which is this show. And so do not forget that you can download these things, and that way, in doing so, you can kind of stay abreast with all the content that I've been putting out there so that you can understand, because I truly believe that knowledge is power. And if you understand what the enemy is, who the enemy is, what they're doing, and those types of things, that form of intelligence will allow you to start focusing where you need to assert your power as the people, because remember, the people are the fountain of power, as Madison stated in Article 10. And that was a common knowledge thing back in their days. They all acknowledged that the people were the fountain of political power. And so the problem is that you and the person driving behind you that's listening to the show as well, because everybody listens to the show, right? So you think that the priorities are, you know, one thing, whatever your pet peeve is, but the person behind you thinks that maybe abortion is the number one problem. That's wrong. The problem is compliance to the Constitution, because if the federal government is complying to the Constitution, they never would have had the power to legalize abortion. They never would have had the power to doing all of these things that they're doing. These are state issues, and they need to remain as state issues. And by doing so, it allows states to start moving in the directions that they choose to do, and other states can adapt and adjust as accordingly to the needs of their people. But going back to this concept of the people are the fountain of power, if you start understanding how to use that power and focusing and channeling with laser-type precision of what you want your representatives to focus on, if it is what I think it should be is the Constitution and getting your representatives to comply and demand and protecting you from federal tyranny and getting our state legislatures, very specifically the state legislatures, to demand that the federal government start complying to the Constitution. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is through using Republic Review. So I am publishing my executive summary so that you can, because it's no longer out there for free. I had it, it's floated out to thousands of people. And so if you want a copy of it, I've actually condensed it I've not just condensed it, I've added a lot to it. And it has all the citations. And so that document itself is available if you email me and you can plead your case. I can give you a free copy, but if not, you can just pay $2.99 and you get your e-file or ebook or PDF or what have you. And there you go. You'll actually be able to read and understand what Republic Review is. And then my next executive summary, as I have been working on it, the strategy of how to convene this convention or this audit, if you want a copy of that, that will be published as well, probably in the next couple of months. So stay tuned on the announcement for those publications. But anyway, this is all the very beginning diatribe that I always go through, that you need to really listen to the content that I put into these shows. So the only way to do that is downloading my podcast. So by all means, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to my podcast archive for last year. And on my podcast for this year, you can actually get copies of this podcast and all the remaining podcasts for this year until I move them to 2018 archive. You know, it makes sense, right? Managing data and keeping it organized, and you got to do that. Anyway, as a follow-up to the press and the elitist manipulation of Christmas, as I stated last week and last year, it seems so long ago, here's a couple of examples that I wanted to throw out at you, because I told you I wanted to start providing some examples of manipulation that the press and the elitists and I would call them the intelligentsia, because I think that's what Thomas Sowell calls them. And a lot of people that, you know, want to direct what we need to be looking and how they want to define terms. And, you know, it's not illegal aliens, they're undocumented residents or what have you. Anyway. So one of the fundamental manipulations that we have been dealing with through the education system and so forth is our basic form of government. We are supposed to be a Republican form of government that recognizes the American model of republicanism. And if you understand this, I've gone through this before. In the American model of republicanism, and republicanism is a representative government, republicanism is not just a representative government in the American model of just the people. The people are represented by the House. The states are the other sovereigns. So in the American model of republicanism, it represents two sovereigns, the states being one, as well as the people being the other. And in the states, they were supposed to have that same model where the counties would be one sovereign that would be acknowledged with representation and the people of those counties as well. Anyway, so our basic form of government has been manipulated into getting you to believe that we are a democracy when we're actually a Republican form of government. I know that I probably don't have time to go into this next one, but we're going to have John Hancock back on. And so I want you to just stay tuned, and I will get into some more, or at least one more example of how we've been manipulated into thinking outside that box. And so if you, stay tuned. And I will get into these secularisms, but I hope you enjoy these next segments that we have with John Hancock today as we start talking about my executive summaries and his perspective on the problems that we're facing as a republic. And so as we come into this hard break, please stay tuned. Please support the sponsors. And thank you so much, and we will be right back after this. Okay, folks, we're back, and I have John Hancock back with us, and I hope you heard our conversation in a previous show. But anyway, John, I wanted to do a little follow-up, and forgive me, I still need to get you my executive summary on Republic Reviews, because I'd like your unabashed opinion on it. But I know we've talked about this before, but let me kind of walk you through the grand scheme, you know, at a high level of what Republic Review is. First off, the Constitution is a contract. It was written for and by the states. The contract, it was stipulated as such of who the stakeholders are of the contract in Article 7 of the Constitution, and supported in Article 5 that the states have the ultimate say on anything to be changed to the contract. It can't just be modified by the contractor, or I should say the federal government, and that bottom line, that inherent within contract law is the ability of the stakeholders of that contract to step in when they feel like the contract is being violated and be able to perform audits in holding their subcontractors accountable and in line and in check with the contract and making sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. And so the big failure, the reason we're in this big mess today, is because the states have been, you know, sleeping at the wheel. They didn't realize, because they've been lulled by constitutional lawyers, Supreme Court jurists, and so forth, and politicians and their own avarice, in believing that the federal government is supreme in all things, when that is contrary to everything within the contract, what the framers said, and so forth. And so Republic Review is the auditing process of the states coming together and basically saying, wait, we never gave you these powers, and being able to undo the statist structure that they have unconstitutionally created, starting with the Department of Interior and lastly adding the Department of Homeland Security. And so I know that we've kind of talked about this, and we've talked about education, but I truly believe that in this auditing process, and I'd like your opinion on it, on the auditing process and on this concept of cancer education. So give me a few more seconds here to set this up. I believe that when a true constitutional state like Wyoming and Idaho and Utah, and some of these flyover states actually put their foot down and go, you know what, we cannot survive as a republic this way. We have to stop this. And they put their foot down and start asserting their authority over the Constitution and challenging and basically taking the charge and dismantling all the unconstitutional government. What'll happen is people will look and go, can they do this? Is this true? Is this valid? And it will cause a mass, you know, movement of people becoming educated on the Constitution. That's what I call cancer education, because people, it'll now start affecting them, and they're going, you know what, are we going to lose our grants for education? Are we going to lose, you know, our housing? All these things that are unconstitutional will start, you know, getting peeled away, and or forcing the dialogue to say, if we really want this, you have to amend the Constitution to do this. And so I believe that will be the mechanism that will be necessary in educating people, because I just don't think, and you can tell me what your opinion is, and I'm sorry for taking this long setup, but I just don't think we have the time to allow an education system to be rebuilt and reteaching people.
No, I agree with you there. The education has to come from other areas. It's not going to happen. You can't reform the schools.
Yeah. At least not now.
And the universities.
Right. We have to dismantle them first.
Yeah. Right. But it's going to be something like this. And I agree with your analogy on cancer education, because, you know, one of the reasons I wrote Liberty Inherited is because I saw a thirst. You know, people were questioning the history they were being taught in school. You know, even people our age, you know, in our 50s and stuff, we were kind of looking back saying, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. And they started, people who had zero interest in history were now looking into it, and they wanted to have, you know, other viewpoints. So I've seen that work in action. All of a sudden, you know, something threatening happens, and people, not everybody, but a good sum of people, and sometimes enough people, look into it and start educating themselves. And, you know, one of the big quotes I love, a friend of mine is Evan Seda, a comedian. He's, you know, and he was a former liberal, New York Jewish liberal, and he said, you know, the first time someone questions what they've been taught is their first step to becoming a conservative. So I do believe that your system will work, and we can't wait. Now, there's two things in our favor here. The one is that, you know, especially with the younger generation stuff, they're not really listening to their professors anymore. I mean, they do the papers, what they say, and repeat, but they aren't buying into it. So they're getting their news now off the internet and off of you know, other social media and stuff, YouTube and everything. So there's an opportunity here where we don't have to take over the education system. We just can bypass it.
Right, for this initial surge. But right. In the grand scheme of things, because I've actually had constitutional professor Dr. Vile on the show, and he's the a dean of honors, and he's also the dean of political science out of Middle Tennessee University. We've talked a few times about Republic Review, and there's not one point in time in any of the minutes, in several minutes, because he's been on three shows, and that one point in time out of those three shows did he ever say, you can't do this, this is unconstitutional, this is outside the scope of the Constitution, anything like that. He couldn't challenge the veracity of my argument. The only thing he has said is that he does not support Republic Review. And I think in my perspective, the real reason why, because we've talked about funding before, he gets millions of dollars. Their school gets millions of dollars from federal funding, grants and so forth. And he talks about the constraints of how they have to comply to very specific things so that they can keep this flow of money coming. And so there's just no doubt in my mind that they are enslaved to the state because they don't believe that Middle Tennessee University and lots of colleges would probably survive on a free market system to where they, you know, can actually get people to come into their school without this federal money on the back end.
Well, and I'm not sure if that would be a bad thing, to tell you the truth. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're teaching something that people see a value, they'll pay for it. You
right,
know?
But so I think the
I'm
problem.
Not sure that's a big thing, but yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's self-interest there.
I think the problem is right now there's not a huge demand for the constitutional conservative, you know, teachings. If you look at where, you know, the money has been going, it's been going towards these liberal arts and so forth. I mean, how many kids have been growing up wanting to become YouTube directors and so forth? You know, they're not seeking an education in engineering. There's very few that are doing that. There's not a lot of people seeking, you know, true constitutional founded teachings. They're just looking for how can I make money or what seems like fun. And so we've got lots of people that are educated in all the wrong things and not enough people educated in the things that our society really needs. So in 1 minute or less, your opinion regarding the shutting down of the education system, obviously we can't dismantle it, but I think you've already stated that, you know, this would be a good mechanism of starting that. And so go ahead.
Right. Well, I think the majority of schools and stuff is a sham, you know, and I'm seeing as I deal more and more with young people that are coming out of school and have degrees that are completely worthless and they're tens of thousands of dollars in debt, all because they've been told that, you know, from elementary school all the way through high school and into college that this is, you know, the key to success and you're going to come out and have this stuff. It's a big, you know, scam. And you know, I question anybody, or, you know, I urge people to question sending your kids to school. If they're going to do something like a law degree, engineering, like you mentioned, that really needs a degree that's going to lead to a job. But if they're just taking psychology or sociology or political science or something like that, you really should be questioning what you're doing. You shouldn't just be following the the herd and thinking you're being a good parent, because you're
not. Right. But as you can hear, John, we've got some music coming in, which means I've got a heartbreak. I'd like to hold you on for at least another segment. So thank you very much. Please stay tuned, folks. We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you. Okay, so we're back with John Hancock, and one of the things I wanted to hold you over for, at least talk to you a little bit more about, is I know that you were instrumental in standing up and creating the United Inland Empire, and so I wanted to get into that, because that's something similar that I'm doing here. So what was the impetus, and how did you guys get this moving?
Well, when I first, I was involved in politics going back to Reagan's reelection, but it was always working at the local party, making phone calls and things. I was never an activist or anything like that until I wrote my book and started getting out there. And what struck me was how disorganized and decentralized everything was. And then I went to Glenn Beck's event in Salt Lake City. I think this is in 2012, right after the election.
Man in the Moon, yes.
Yes, and when I was there, everybody, it's just right after the election. Everybody was so, depressed and everything. And one of the biggest frustrations of the people on the street there was that the conservative groups were too busy fighting each other. The Women Republican Federated was upset at they were more worried about the Tea Party down the street than they were about the progressives down the road, down the hall.
Right.
And people were frustrated. So when I came back, I got together with Don Dix, and neither one of us had really political backgrounds, but we had marketing backgrounds and business backgrounds. So we sat at a Starbucks and started talking and saying, how can we do this? What we got to do if we're going to change something, we got to take these groups that were basically small pockets of resistance and turn them into a united front.
Right.
And we did that by bringing the leadership. I kind of based this on, I belong to a business lunch group, and it was, we'd bring business leaders together, and they would talk and share what they do and who they are. And that's kind of how this started. We started bringing the leadership, not people, not the general people from these groups, but the leaders of these groups. And we had monthly meetings with the leaders. And, I tell you what, the first time we met, it was like, one side of the room was this group, the other side was this group. No one would talk to each other. Everybody was just in their own little clique.
Uh-huh.
And then, after probably a few months of them meeting and stuff, they realized that, neither side were extremist or anything, and they ended up working together. And one of the biggest successes was, I don't know if you remember, in Marietta, they were busing in the illegal alien, quote-unquote, children.
Oh, yes.
And all of a sudden, all these people turned out. Well, the main reason that was Unite IE, because now instead of one group just coming out with 10 people, they were able, through the network that we created with the leadership of other groups, to get now 100, 200, 300 people out there.
Right, right. So,
and that was a big victory for Unite IE.
So this leadership that you're talking about, and the reason this is important is because I've done something kind of the same but different in a united front here. But the leadership that you were talking about, I believe that was like ACT, ACT for America.
Sure, it'd be ACT for America. There was
Tea Party.
Tea Party. Yep. There was Women Republican Federated. There was an organization called the California Republican Assembly.
Right.
John Birch. Oath Keepers. John Birch was part of it. They didn't
stay.
Right. It was, they wanted to dominate. So
right.
It was like, yeah.
Okay.
So that didn't work too well. But, they were always welcome. They just need to understand and respect the other people there.
Right.
Who else is there? There's a different type of constitutional groups, Doug's Constitutional Association, Doug Gibbs, his is in there.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was just a mix. Anybody that was welcome that shared some, some basic principles of liberty and freedom, Americanism, you had to share these principles.
Yeah.
But other than that, you were welcome to come. And one of the things that we did to avoid controversy, which was something that was controversial itself, is that Unite IE itself never endorsed candidates or took positions on policies. And that was because we looked at the groups that tried to do this, and that's what made them fall apart. So we always left that up to the individual groups to do on their own.
Okay, interesting. Let me tell you what something different that I'm doing here is I actually targeted the political leadership. I know that there's Tea Party, there's grassroots activists and so forth. I included them, but I actually targeted the chairs of the Republican Party, the Libertarian right. Party, and the Constitution Party. And so the chairs were because they actually have the apparatus of, you know, the grassroots of the party itself. And so when you have a legislature leave the House, or whether it be the federal representative or what have you, it always comes back to the PCOs of that particular party that will elect the replacement, and that's kind of the mechanism. And so that's an integral part in the political system. And so I've included the chairs involved in this, as well as some of the other grassroots. Oath Keepers, I haven't gotten them to the table yet, but I'm working with the militia and these other folks and trying to create this round table of leadership and getting them to focus on the Constitution and vetting candidates based on the Constitution. And so I'm not that I'm going down that dangerous path of necessarily, you know, this person or that person. I'm trying to get everybody to basically say this person is the most constitutional candidate and leave it at that. And,
right.
And that way, it kind of creates that a standard that we should be having with all. And I'm hoping that we can get this out in a model to everywhere, to where people actually start vetting candidates on their constitutionality and their ability to protect and serve the Constitution, because they understand it more than their biblically based ideologies. Because there's organizations up here, and I think they're down there as well, as We Believe We Vote, which, you know, they only support biblically based candidates. And I find danger in organizations like that, because the Constitution, Article 6 of the Constitution, says that there should be no standard or religious test towards anybody who is seeking public office. And that's exactly what these folks are doing. As a matter of fact, the progressives have been beating us at this, because they bring in religious issues and religious matters, such as abortion, such as homosexual marriage. Those are all religious matters. Those aren't secular. Those right. aren't governance. And so it has nothing to do with the Constitution. We shouldn't be entertaining conversations and positions on religious matters, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And what is interesting with our organization, what ended up happening was, like I said, the organizations were able to, the different clubs were able to do their own candidates, forms, whatever they want, and stuff. Unite IE was just more of a networking group for them. But what was interesting, what transpired, is how over time, because these groups started cross-pollinizing with each other, like members would go to each other's meetings. So now what happened over time is these groups began to kind of mirror each other.
Right, right.
So now, you know, where Women Republican Federated groups used in the area used to be very, you would call them establishment-type Republican groups, they are now not too much different out here than with what you would hear at a Tea Party. In fact, a lot of the group people who Good. Were from Republican Women Federated groups went to right. Tea Party groups, then became the leaders of the Republican Federated groups, and then made them almost took on the some of the policies and the attitudes of the Tea Parties.
Right. Well, so John, I barely got a minute, probably just a little over a minute left for the show. And so what I'd like to do, because I need to get this Republic Review executive summary over to you. And so what I'm going to do is ask you, if you wouldn't mind, we can schedule some more time to have you come back on. I think there's merit in that. That way you can actually speak to the premise that I'm putting out, in, you know, whether it's founded or what have you, and you can talk to it more specifically. But that way we can, you know, talk about that. And what I'll do is I'll give you my draft of my other executive summary, because the groundwork, what you guys are doing down there and what I'm trying to do up here, is an integral part of changing the paradigm and changing the focus of what we need to be doing. Instead of managing agendas, it's getting back to the principles, you know, that our framers used, and those, you know, the principles of individual liberty and sovereignty, as we talked about in the previous show. And so if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to schedule with you in the near future to bringing you back on so we can talk about those specific issues of Republic Review, as well as, you know, the United IE and my constitutional committees of correspondence that I'm trying to create. And so if that sounds fair.
No, I would love to come on.
Okay, great,
again.
Great.
That'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for your time. Folks, we will be right back with the last segment after this break. Thank you so much. Okay, we're back, and I am not sure about you, but I really think the world of John. As a matter of fact, I remember meeting him at a Constitution Association meeting back in, I want to say, 2013, and I remember getting his book, and I still have his book that he has not signed yet, because I knew when I met him, because of the way he had presented his material, it just... I mean, it's like two like minds of, you know, his perspective of history and my perspective. It's not like we collaborated at all, but we both kind of look at things very, very similar. And so I still need to get that book to him, and because I said, you know what, I'm going to have you sign this and autograph it and make a little note for me. But I think we're going to get to know each other, and I'm going to have you do this later. So I don't know if he remembers that. I'll have to ask him because I just ran out of time in talking to him. But I think the world of the guy, and I'm so happy that he's obtained these levels of success in getting out and speaking at the international forum and so forth. And I am planning on working with him this year. We're doing some Republic Review rodeos this coming year, and as more information becomes solidified, I will provide that to you. So we'll be traveling to a few different states and so forth. But let me get back to these manipulations that I was talking about in the very first segment of the show today. I talked about our basic form of government and how we've completely perverted the concept of republicanism. The other form that I want to give you, and this is a general form, and I'm going to get into the details of this because I've talked about this on the show itself throughout several iterations and so forth, and I talk about Platonism and all of that. But the other form of manipulation is in a grand picture, or the macro view, is secularism and the secularist ideology. And so the one little area that I kind of want to focus on, that I have actually focused on before, is the concept of the separation of church and state. That kids and everybody uses that mantra today, though there's supposed to be a separation between church and state. That is incorrect. The federal government is required to stay out of religious doctrine and dogma, and the states are required to no longer restrict religious expression of individuals. However, that's where it ends. There's nowhere in the Bill of Rights that states that the states, because you got to understand, the 14th Amendment applied the Bill of Rights to the states. In Section 1, but it did not apply carte blanche all of the Bill of Rights. It only applied the Bill of Rights as it pertained to individual privileges and individual immunities, not religion or religious organizations and so forth. So states do not have the application of the
Establishment Clause. In the First Amendment, there's this thing called the Establishment Clause, that the federal government was constrained in not being able to establish a religion. However, the states at that point in time already had established religions, and states have the power and the freedom to establish their own religions. The one thing that changed, again, is the 14th Amendment. And in the 14th Amendment, it only applied the individual privileges and immunities. So a state no longer has the ability to dictate an individual expression, to say you cannot express that religious ideology, but it can restrict religious organizations. Organizations are not people, just like people want to claim that corporations and businesses, they're not the same as people, that their expressions are a little bit, you know, they can be controlled or constrained somewhat. And so even though the Supreme Court has kind of ruled one way on, you know, campaign financing and so forth, the bottom line is that the states actually have the ability to establish, and they maintained established religions even after the 14th Amendment. There were two states of the original 13 that still had established churches after the 14th Amendment, and there was no effort by the federal government to go after South Carolina and Delaware. I believe it was Delaware. Maybe it was New Hampshire. I think it was New Hampshire. Yeah, New Hampshire was the last, and South Carolina was the second to last. But anyway, the 14th Amendment was passed, and both of those states maintained and kept intact their established religions for almost a decade beyond that, but they started adopting secularism as well. Now, there were other states that still had state-sponsored religions, even though they weren't a part of the 13, and a good example of that was Utah. Utah actually had a state-sponsored church as a territory, and when it became a state, because the state, even though what the Mormons were doing was a lot different than the original colonies, because they were taxing people to basically pay into the church. But with the Mormons, they had this thing, you know, they had the tithes and so forth, where the people were contributing directly into the church, and the church was providing the education and services that was necessary for the people, that the government wasn't providing that. And so that was just one example of a state-sponsored religion, or where a religion was central within the state, and it didn't apply the Establishment Clause. In other words, and what I'm trying to get to is, the Establishment Clause did not apply to those particular states, or to any of the states. The states still have the ability to establish a religion if they choose to. And I know this kind of crashes into some of your paradigms, but as we start examining this moving forward, I want to get into some more details on this, because I truly believe that when you start looking at this from different angles of state-sponsored churches, that you might actually start agreeing with me, because I've actually had these conversations with some people, and they have never really looked at it the way that the framers were looking at this. And I believe, again, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. As I was saying at the very beginning, that, you know, my whole point of this Republic Review, and especially this show, Reclaiming the Republic, is to get people on that middle part, equally informed, to try to get everybody to a level of understanding on the Constitution and the founding principles that the framers were using, such as natural law. What is natural law? Republicanism. Those types of principles, so that we can start having this equal informed, because again, that clause saying reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree, we'll actually start getting to a point where we're just going to start agreeing. And as I was talking about at the very beginning, with knowledge is power, and people are the focus, or I should say people are the fountain of power for politics, or the political power, we have the ability to start agreeing on how to focus our political energy for our representatives as we move forward, so that they can start serving us instead of trying to serve all these disparate things. Because when everybody's clamoring about their own little pet peeve,
how are they going to be able to serve us? They're just going to give us a plethora of laws and a plethora of just garbage instead of focusing on the federal tyranny that we're dealing with, because that is the driving problem that is destroying our republic, and it's destroying our lives. It's destroyed the mores of this nation as we start to see, you know, how debased and the debauchery in behavior is just running amok. Well, the only way to start changing that is, again, getting people to start getting at that equally informed so that we can start focusing. And again, I want to focus on what the real problem is, that the federal government shouldn't be dictating what our moral standards should be. The federal government should not be dictating that we have to start, you know, bowing to and providing protected status towards kids that are rebellious and choose to decide that they want to think about being a different gender or non-gender specific. I mean, this is all just crap. I just can't believe that we're in this space today and that the federal government is driving this train. They have, where in the Constitution did we delegate them this power to do this? And so I'm not advocating we take anybody out and stone them. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm just saying that the federal government has no business in driving anything. These are all state issues, and that this power needs to be brought back to the state so that reasonable people can start deciding how they want to live their life. Do we want to go back towards the debauchery, or do we want to move back towards enlightenment? And I believe if we start leaning on those principles that the framers used, then again, I truly believe that we will lean towards enlightenment and a better society. And that's how we're going to reclaim this republic. And with that, my friends, we will be back next week with Reclaiming the Republic. And I will talk to you then. So God bless and have a good week.